Hi, Sierra.
Hi, Father.
How are you doing today?
It's good to see you.
Yeah, we're both smiling. It's a great day. It's a Friday. Everybody loves a Friday.
Right? Happy Friday. Well, welcome everybody. Those of you tuning in. It's a beautiful Friday afternoon here in Old Snowmass, Colorado. Dad's calling in from Los Angeles, California, and this will be our fourth energy crash course. And today we're going to be talking about electric vehicles. And our goal in these 30-minute live conversations is to really demystify these very exciting, ever-evolving topics around clean energy. And so today we're going to start with electric vehicles. And maybe even before doing that, Dad, you said you want to maybe offer a disclaimer, just kind of give us some scope because it's such a broad field.
A couple of sort of scope comments, I guess, would be that the term EVs, electric vehicles, is quite broad, and it includes not only cars that we're going to talk about today, but it includes trucks and buses and planes. There's electric planes now, and trains and boats. So there's a lot going on in this whole movement to a decarbonized forms of mobility. And even within the what we're going to call even within the cars, the passenger vehicle world, there's also some interesting nuances. There's all the plug-in hybrid electrics, right? That have the first 40 miles that's electric, and then something else happens, interestingly. There's hydrogen electric vehicles that actually use hydrogen running through a fuel cell to create electricity, and that's an EV too. But for this crash course, we're going to talk about the most common form, like the Teslas, right? The battery electric vehicles. We're going to focus on those for this course.
Yeah, and as we dive into that, thought it might be useful to kind of provide some context as to, for those non-mechanical folks out there, how does a traditional car work, and why is it problematic?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've been writing recently about the end of ICE, which is the internal combustion engine. And you dump your gasoline into your go to the gas station and you put the gas in the gas tank. And then what happens when you turn that car on? Well, the little bit of gas is being mixed together with some oxygen inside cylinders, and those under pressure, and they explode. There's a little explosion. There's all these little explosions that are going on inside under your hood of your car. And nothing wrong with that. We've had a century of really high performance cars, and we've had a lot of fun with them, I think, as a society. But the result is that when you burn a hydrocarbon, gasoline, you end up resulting with carbon dioxide emissions. And this is the root of all the global warming problems. And vehicles are more and more part of the problem because they rely on gasoline. Our electric grid is becoming cleaner and cleaner. We're moving away from coal and fossil fuels and more towards solar and wind. So our grid is getting cleaner. Now the electric vehicles come along and allow us to retire that engine in our car. There's all those explosions going on, all of those combustion, internal combustion going on, and replace it with a little electric motor that's silent, clean. Any of us that grew up having slot cars, that's what electric vehicles are really like, just zipping around in an emissions-free way.
And before we get into more of the details around EVs, on a global scale, what percentage is transportation contributing to planetary carbon emissions?
It's about 30%. It's
Yeah.
about 30% in the U.S. and it's
Simple.
about 30% globally. And then when you break that down, when you say, okay, well, what percent of that 30%, what percent is the car? The car is about 60% of that. So we're at about 18% of global emissions come from the tailpipes of the cars that we're going to be talking about replacing today.
And electric vehicles aren't a brand new invention. Do we want to just talk? Will you please talk a
Yeah.
little bit about the history of EVs and kind of their evolution?
It's such a fun story that Henry Ford's wife drove an EV. It was a 19 excuse me a 19 1914 Detroit Electric was her car. And I read an article that said that girls back then dig electric cars because they did not explode. And at that time, at the beginning of that century, there were pretty much three options for cars. And one was using electric, but that Ford, by the way, I mean, the Detroit Electric that Clara Ford drove had went 20 miles per hour. That was it. And it did have 80 miles of range. But in those days, they were looking at using electric or using steam engines, which were locomotives and all were using steam engines, or using gasoline. And everybody thought gasoline was the most dangerous option of all. But of course, then Henry Ford produced the Model T in 1908. It decimated the electric car industry for a whole century. So it wasn't until 1990 that there was a California state law that required zero emissions vehicles. And all of a sudden, General Motors had to produce something. And it came out with, in 1996, it came out with the GM. At first, they called it the Impact. It was got a societal impact, but pretty bad name for a car. It sounds like you're getting into an accident. Right. They renamed it the EV. They renamed it the EV1. And it was just an amazing car when I first came to LA with you. My job working for the city of LA was promoting the EV1. I drove one all over the place. It was super high tech, but it got 70 miles of range. It used lead acid batteries. And then the regulations in California changed. And in 2007, General Motors scrapped the Impact altogether. It promised it would come back with something better. And actually, it did fulfill its promise. It came back with a Chevy Volt in 2010, which is the best-selling or the car of the year back then. It was this hybrid electric. And then it came out a number of years, about another 8 years later, with the Chevy Bolt. In 2011, the Nissan Leaf, this is before Tesla, the Nissan Leaf was the best-selling car in the world. It sold about 10,000 units. And by the way, now the best-selling car in the world, the Tesla Model Y, is selling more like 200 or 250,000 units. So things have really come a long way. But fun that there are these long routes in the industry. We've come around now, largely because of the advent of the lithium-ion battery that allows us to have such great energy density in a battery that allows you to couple that battery with mobility.
And some of us have seen that movie, Who Killed the Electric Car? But could you speak to that? Is that like a technological thing that happened, or was that the petroleum industry that kind of came in like that? I know that between 1990 and 2010, there was a bit of a stagnation with electric vehicles. What happened there?
Well, I think the word is basically the auto industry, probably backed with the petroleum industry, was able to repeal some of that very progressive California legislation that had initiated that vehicle. So all of a sudden, the regulatory support, the policy support, and I want to talk a little bit about that when we talk about Norway, because if you've got the right policies in place, you can have massive EV adoption. But the policy support was ripped out from underneath of the GM EV1. And many people were upset about it and felt that GM was just simply trying to make more money by selling their conventional brands than others. And you know, these concerns have been even more recently. You know, Toyota has been objecting to many people have said that Toyota has been retarding the progress of the EV market, largely because they want to continue producing their hybrids and that they're more interested in hydrogen. Now, Toyota has now come on board, as I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, so there's some major conflicting interests. And of course, the electric car is only as green as the energy that it's sourced from, right? So can you talk about that a little bit? It sounds like if the grid is clean energy based, like it is in California, you know, what a wonderful benefit. But if people are charging their batteries from coal, so I guess that speaks to the policy issue as well.
Yeah, I was going to get into this. I would really resisted getting an electric vehicle for some years because I didn't buy the zero emissions. I mean, that's zero tailpipe emissions. But as you're suggesting, if the majority of your electricity that comes to charge the car is coming from a coal-fired power plant, that's a dirty vehicle as far as I'm concerned. So I waited until I had enough solar on my own roof to power my own car before I invested in electric vehicles so that I can be very much guilt-free and feeling that this is really part of the solution, not just a continuation of the old world. One of the big concerns about EVs is that you're taking a huge amount of energy requirement that is basically the mobility in America. And you're saying, okay, now we're going to say, no, we're not going to get that from fossil fuels anymore. We're going to get that from electricity. And so there's been all sorts of analysis. Are we going to double the requirement on the grid? By the way, there's also building decarbonization going on. So we're going to take out all of the oil-fired and gas-fired boilers out of all these buildings. We're going to replace it all with heat pumps and electric equipment. That's all going on the grid. So these two things, electric mobility and building decarbonization, potentially will double the impact on the grid. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, I'm just very fortunate. We have lots and lots and lots of clean renewables that are coming online that we can rely on to make that transition so we can decarbonize both the electricity sector and then by extension, decarbonize buildings and mobility.
Can the grid handle it? Is my question.
It's got to be added to, you know. So here in Glendale, you know, I'm involved with our utility and we're planning for that load growth. And obviously we can reduce the load right now by maximizing energy efficiency. There's still lots of that in society, but we will need additional resources. We'll need offshore wind, we'll need more solar, but yes, that's the plan, is to decarbonize. And that's really the exciting thing about electric vehicles, is it allows us to decarbonize transportation.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And as you know, there's more demand on the grid and hopefully more capacity added to the grid, like your solar panels. What about the implications around the batteries and lithium mining and whatnot? Like, can you expand on the demand for batteries and what the environmental repercussions of that are? How sustainable is that? And, you know, what is that going to mean, you know, several years down the road?
Yeah, we could probably just do a crash course on batteries. There's so much going on with battery chemistry right now. We just wrote about a new battery, the Blade battery, Blade batteries that are a form of lithium batteries that are now being used in China and very successfully. Even Tesla is going to put them in their cars. There's new reports now of recycled batteries being repurposed and put back in cars. That's really a new piece of information for me. I thought we were gonna have to take them all out of the cars and just use them for stationary applications. But there's a lot of research. I mean, you're right in asking the question, because typically batteries degrade over time. And therefore, after about 10 years, they'd have to be swapped out. And then isn't that a huge solid waste issue? But fortunately, there are, in fact, one of the originators of, I think, Tesla now is in the battery recycling business. I mean, and just repurposing these materials. And it's sort of over my head. The chemistry is over my head, but it's very, very, very encouraging, because that is one of the issues. And lithium ion, which I consider the new gasoline, you know, may not be the chemistry at all. I mean, lithium is in finite quantities and found in different areas around the globe, like Bolivia, places that we don't want to be dependent upon. So it's exciting to realize that there will be advances in batteries. And we'll talk about charging, but there'll also be advances in charging. I mean, it may be that you don't need a big battery on your car, because as you drive down a roadway, you may be inductively charged as you drive along. Right. So obviates the need for a big battery bank altogether. So stay tuned in this space. It's really exciting.
Yeah. So it seems like it's just evolving at an accelerated pace right now. What is the state of the EV market?
Yeah, I'm glad.
Passenger vehicles specifically.
Well, you know, I was happy to dig into some of these numbers, and I'm curious to know, when you ask the average person, listener on this show, how many vehicles are sold each year in the world? And I'd venture to guess. And it's right now about 70 million, because we're in pandemic times, and it might be about 80 million a year that are sold in non-pandemic times. And last year, 5.6 million EVs were sold. So we're up there in that 5-7% now. And EV, by the way, it's 5.6 million last year. The year before that, it was only 3.1 million. The year before that, it was 2 million. So who knows it? Wow. We're going to be getting past the 5% and moving quickly to the 10% in the global EV sales. Those numbers are about the same in America. We're purchasing about 17 million cars a year. And now EVs are coming in at around 4 or 5% of that right now. But again, it's the fastest growing market in the auto segment. So again, stay tuned. I think we'll really see some dramatic rise. But and if you go to a place like Norway, right, where Norway is an oil producing nation.
Right.
And Norway has put policies in place to meet its climate protection goals. And right now, Norway is selling around 75% of all new cars are EVs in Norway.
Really? Wow.
You're in the right place. Now, before we move away from this topic, realize that China is still the biggest EV market in the world and has more EVs than anywhere. So it's quite something. A couple other highlights. Hertz, rental car that just went bankrupt, has restructured, just purchased 100,000 Teslas for its fleet. That will be 20% of its worldwide fleet. Here's another one, Volkswagen Group, which has the Porsche Holdings and the Volkswagen Group, Audi. It has come out in the press saying it's taking on Tesla, right? It does not intend to be second to Tesla in the future. It is selling home energy storage systems like Tesla Powerwalls. It's buying electricity for its consumers and selling it to them at a discount. And again, it has this stated goal of overtaking Tesla in production of EVs by 2025. So there's just huge action in the EV world right now, and everybody making proclamations and jumping in.
Well, and just tying back to the earlier question about the environmental implications of the battery mining, I mean, and the fact that this market is shifting so quickly, should people be waiting to purchase an EV? Like, what do you, is the time ripe? I mean, like you said, you waited until you actually had the infrastructure to support it. Is it one of those answers? It depends.
No, I don't think so. I think the benefits are so great right now. And yes, there are these longer term issues of availability of the materials to build the batteries and how do we deal with degradation and can we recycle them? But yeah, it's a happening thing. I like to lease products that I'm not sure about. Right. So I think solar panels I'm pretty comfortable with. Okay to recommend buying solar panels, but I'm very comfortable just leasing these vehicles and having them for 3 or 4 years and then seeing what the next technology brings. Hmm.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So you mentioned range earlier. Maybe you could build on that as well as some other benefits of EVs and why there's this major buzz around this technology.
Well, let's hit on range first. Because I mentioned Clara Ford, Henry Ford's wife, who had 20 miles of range. And I mentioned the EV1 that had 70 or 80 miles of range and the Nissan Leaf that had about 100 miles of range. And now the Chevy Bolt that I have has 258 miles of range. Some Teslas have over 400 miles of range. And there's new EVs coming on the market that are going to have over 500 miles of range. So we're really...
Just to interrupt you really quick, this means that this is how many miles the car can go on a full charge of battery before you have to recharge the battery.
Right. And this is what everybody's worried about. This is what everybody's been worried about. What if I run out of power? And there's all sorts of stories. Early EV owners that turned on the air conditioning and that drained the battery down. They didn't realize it. Or the headlights were competing.
You're on the 405, just coming to a sudden stop.
the headlights are competing for range. The radio is competing for range. It's ridiculous. We're fortunately just well past that. Range is almost becoming a non-issue. And one of the things that I was excited about to hear about just in the past couple of weeks is that there's 53 utilities, big utilities across the country, have now formed the National Electric Highway Association. So they have a stated goal of energizing all of the major US transportation corridors across the country. So putting in charging stations again and again and again so that it makes it possible to drive across the country.
Great. I mean, because I know that's one of the biggest issues, you know, but maybe you could talk a little bit about our trips to Laguna. Back in California, my mom lives in Laguna Beach. My dad lives in Glendale, California. And his car has just enough range that fully charged, we can drive all the way down to Laguna and all the way back. And we actually had a very fruitful conversation about just this. But range-wise, that works. But to come and, you know, visit a thousand miles away or so, is, you wouldn't really depend on your EV.
That's right. Well, actually, we could do the trip to Laguna more than twice with the current vehicle. But I did want to throw out some of the numbers, because you asked about one of the benefits of EVs.
And
in my view, the big benefit is saving the earth, right? This is all part of what we can do as individuals to clean emissions or to reduce emissions. And then another big benefit is the cost savings. And, you know, I'm only paying $200 a month for my Chevy Bolt. That's, I think, a relatively low cost. There's zero maintenance costs at all. I once called up Chevy and said, should I bring my car in for a tune-up? They said, you don't need a tune-up. I said, should I bring it in? Well, if you want to bring it in, we'll rotate the tires for you. That's all that it needed. But another big, huge benefit is just the operating cost and how low that is. And so I want to just give you a couple numbers here on my Laguna trip. And I go to see, when we see her, we bounce back and forth between Glendale and Laguna. It's 100 miles round trip. So my electric vehicle gets about 4 miles per kilowatt hour. And that's typical for an EV, 4 miles per kilowatt hour. And thus, for 100 miles, that's a 25 kilowatt hours that I need to go that 100 miles. So, you know, my solar system, now we got a pretty good deal here, but we have good utility incentives and we took advantage of tax credits. My levelized cost of energy for my solar system is only 4 cents, right? A kilowatt hour, 4 cents a kilowatt hour. That's really good. So now I needed 25 kilowatt hours. So I can do that round trip to Laguna Beach for a buck, right? Now let's say that I buy for the grid, because that's more typical, and maybe 16 cents a kilowatt hour. Now it's $4, right, to go to Laguna Beach. Well, let's say I've got a hugely inefficient vehicle. I don't know, some huge SUV or Hummer or something. I don't even know what, a big truck or something that makes me feel really big. And I'm only getting 10 miles to the gallon. Well, that's 10 gallons I would need for that trip, right? 100 miles. And that's at $4 a gallon, that's $40. Now you're comparing that against my $1 price I'm paying. Now, okay, that's not really fair, because I don't need that big truck. Well, I used to have a Prius. I love Prius. They get 50 miles to the gallon. And that's 2 gallons, or that's $8. So now compare that with my $1, or compare that with my $4 if I bought my electricity from the grid. So you can just see that. And that's why there's these amazing, you hear these amazing claims, like this car gets 100 miles to the gallon. That's effectively what they're getting. It's a little bit of a complex computation, but if you just think about it this way, this might help out, is that an internal combustion engine that we talked about at the top of this podcast is about 20% efficient. Most of that energy, that burning of those fuels, is given off as heat, noise and heat, right? Waste.
Right.
Whereas the electric motor is 80 to 90% efficient. So that's really what we're doing, is we're trying to tap that fundamental, huge difference in efficiency.
Well, and the public health benefits of not, you know, the asthma and all of the, like, the nasty things that come from all of those, that particulate matter that's burnt in the internal combustion engine becomes a non-issue too. So we wanted to touch on charging a little bit.
We really should. This is where I think everybody has got lots of questions and comments, and you know what, it's moving as fast as the EV market is moving. But to be clear, every EV is sold with a level one charger, which is kind of like an extension cord that you can, you know, plug into your car and plug into any household 110 outlet, and you can charge your EV. Now that's good, but it's really, really slow. About 4 miles of range per hour. So for a car like my Chevy Bolt, where I've got 250 miles of range, that's about 80 hours to charge if I was completely out. 80 hours, three days to charge the vehicle. That's really too long. If you're just using your vehicle for short trips, like I usually am, just down to the train station, that's sufficient. But if you have to have back-to-back trips to Laguna Beach, say, or to San Diego or wherever you're going, then you need something else. So the level two charger is a 220 volt charger. It charges about 10 times as fast. So I can charge my car fully in overnight, right, with a level two charger. Level three, DC fast chargers. These are pretty cool. The industry says you charge in minutes, not hours, right? So they're really charging at a very, very high rate. And imagine if you had a 200 kW charger and you're trying to fill up a 60 kWh battery, you can do that in less than an hour. You can do that in about 20 minutes.
Wow.
There's level four superchargers that go up to as high as 450 kW. That would mean that my car would charge in probably about 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes. So,
but what is the standard that we're seeing in parking lots?
The standard we're seeing in parking lots is 7 kW, right? So
how long would it take?
That's the level two is the 7 kW. Okay. That would take me the 8 hours. And if we go to level three, where we're somewhere like the Tesla's charging stations are 100 to 200 kW, you know, now you're down to, excuse me, now you're down to 20, 30 minutes to charge your car. And then these superchargers, and Porsche's very involved with this, could be a matter of 5 or 8 minutes to charge your car. Tesla, by the way, is licensed to be in the restaurant business, and it's planning on putting restaurants at its charging station. So you can get a bite to eat, or maybe if you're on the highway, you can take a shower, or you can watch a movie. There's companies that are building charging stations that are around dine-ins or drive-ins, where you can get a sandwich or a hamburger or whatever you want, some fries, while your car is charging. So this whole charging world is exciting. There's lots of government support for charging. There's lots of utilities here in California. The utilities have really lofty goals to make charging ubiquitous, because this is the number one concern that people have about getting an electric vehicle, is that, hey, what if I run out? And you know, AAA has already got batteries on board. AAA will give you, 10 miles of range or whatever it is. There needs to be as many electric charging stations as there are gas stations. And we're getting there. And the nice thing is you can have one at home too. So the most of us can just charge overnight and not even have to deal with going to a gas station.
And so we're seeing the utility and even oil companies calling themselves energy companies, who are all kind of all in on this, right?
I just read this morning that Shell is building this whole network of electric gas stations, electric charging stations all through the UK. And so, yeah, this is something that the oil companies realize now. I mean, certainly the car companies realize that you can't buck this trend. You got to get ahead of the trend.
What do you see moving forward? I mean, we obviously have a lot of work to do with decarbonizing our economy by 2030. What do you envision the next, say, 5 to 7 to 10 years looking like?
I think we're just going to have a whole lot more of the same. We're at that J curve of EV adoption. We're just at that inflection point. We're just starting to rise up, and cars are getting to a point where they're, by the way, EVs are less expensive to build than internal combustion engine cars. There's just so many fewer parts. EVs can be cheaper. We have in LA now, this year, we'll have something like 40 models that are available in the LA market. It's every car company, I wrote down a list of car companies that we know that are getting in the EV world. Ferrari, Porsche, Audi, VW just introduced two really cool EVs last year. BMW, Cadillac, Volvo, its first EV, Ford, Hyundai, Kia, Mazda, the Ford Mustang is now an EV, right? It's a classic car. Mercedes-Benz just introduced a car with 422 miles of range. The VW minibus is back as an electric camper van. And then there's all sorts of companies that we've never even heard of, or I had never heard of: Bollinger, Polestar, Lordstown Motors, Atlas, Hercules, Canoe, Flickr, Alpha Wolf, Fisker Ocean. So there's just, by the way, then you've got Apple maybe making a car. And then Sony has got a new car called the Vision S Electric. There's a lot going on. So I think the price of batteries has come down. The awareness has gone up. Everybody recognizes the need. There's greater and greater infrastructure. So Yeah, jump in, I would say.
Yeah, this is more than just a fad. This is the direction that this decarbonization movement is going. So just in our last 30 seconds, Dad, can you, for anybody who's really, you know, paying attention and wants to stay on top of this movement, maybe thinking about purchasing a car, are there some resources or thought leaders you might recommend?
I do. Thank you for that question. Plug-in America is a trade association of EV owners. It's headed up by a friend of mine, Joel Levin, but it is national. They've done a lot of work. They have a really good website, Plug-in America. You can actually become, not only get information, but you can actually become part of their movement and part of their lobbying effort. There's three publications that I track EV news from. One is called Inside EVs. Another is called Electrek. And the third is called Clean Technica. And so those are great sources of information. Folks are welcome to be on our website. We have written a lot about EVs over the years and we'll continue to do so.
And of course, the Net Positive podcast now has 60 plus episodes. So there's a wealth of information and knowledge. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in today. Father, it's a pleasure as always. We will be back soon with our next crash course. So stay tuned and have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, Sierra. Good stuff. Thanks,
Dad. Bye.